Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adusk here at Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. My co-host today is our foreign correspondent, Roger Sales, calling in from Argentina. We'll get to Roger in a moment. First, the market reports. Gold is down $18.60 today to $1,452.70 an ounce. Silver's off a dime to $24.04 per ounce. Platinum is down $23, $1,485 per ounce. Palladium down 12 to $686 an ounce. Dow Jones is up 86 points to 15,055. NASDAQ is up 4 points to 3,397. New York Stock Exchange is up 60 points, almost 59.48, but 60 points to 9,408 points. U.S. dollar index is down 0.04 to 82.28, and crude oil is off 71 cents per barrel to $95.45 per barrel. Hello, Roger. How are you doing?
Hey, Al, I'm doing great, man, today. But listen, you announced me as the foreign correspondent, and you forgot the middle initial. You remember S? We were talking about it last week.
I'm getting old, Roger. You understand. You got to understand. You're not a – you're. I don't know if you're a year younger than I am or a year older. I don't remember.
Younger.
Younger.
I'm younger. You're the oldest.
But I have more hair.
True.
I may be older, but I still have more hair.
Well,
so,
you know, there's a
nobody calls me Alfred. Nobody uses my middle initial just because I have a little more hair on my head.
Well, hell, you're not a foreign correspondent. Of course
well,
not.
I'm foreign to Argentina.
You're a domestic correspondent. You just use their regular
name. Foreign to Argentina. You know, we may have some people down there listening to this program. You never know.
I pity them. I pity them if they are.
Right.
I had a point out of that, Al. I was going to transition into something significant here, and that is that, you know, I came to the realization many years ago that being specific like that has become part of my nature, and that's kind of the reason I wanted to bring that up in a joking way, is because what I learned is that they trick us with generalities, all this confusion and ambiguity and all that stuff, and then they come back and zap you with a specific, man. I mean, so they're tricking you and setting you up with generalities and then zapping you from behind with these things with incredible specificity, fine-tuned thinking. Okay?
Yeah.
And, I mean, let's face it. In that situation, if you don't understand what's happening, you ain't got a chance.
You absolutely have to be a master of the language. That's what's
You know, if I didn't know better, I'd have thought it was set up like that, Al.
What do you mean it was set up like that? Are you talking about the legal system?
So that they, like, have the people generally thinking with muddy thinking and confused and up is down and black is white and money is debt and all that stuff. And then they come in and just like, kapow, they got you with a little specificity laser that they just zap in on you on some point they've got you clouded on, and you don't have a chance.
In some instances, that's what they do, but also they not only rely on, they use specificity part of the time, but they also rely on ambiguity. And
absolutely,
they will ask you a question, for example, do you understand the charges? And virtually every damn fool in the country says, oh, yeah, I understand the charges. There's one man in a thousand who truly understands what the charges are, all right, in terms of comprehending. But no one wants to admit they're dumb, so they say, yes, I understand the charges. And as near as I'm able to understand, they're using the word understand, not to mean comprehend, but do you agree? Do you consent to the charges?
Well, once you give them an opening,
not do you comprehend, but do you agree?
Right, and they give you a big general question like that, and you answer yes. You know, in the old days, they would add, they said, you know, that you had to be informed of the nature and the cause of the accusation.
Mm-hmm.
So not only the cause, which is where the whatever they're coming at you did originated, but the nature. Now, we've touched on this before, but when you get into that nature and cause, what is the nature of a charge?
Well, either positive or negative. That's what they teach you in physics, Roger. They teach you either the charge on the neutron, or excuse me, on the electrons and the protons is either positive or negative.
Okay, well, I don't think that's the nature they're talking about here.
No, I agree with you.
That they were alluding to with specificity, actually, in that instance, was the jurisdiction. Because there's six or seven different jurisdictions, so they got to know not only the cause, but the jurisdiction which that thing's going to be in. And that's what that phrase meant. And I always thought it was very interesting, because I really have never met anybody except John that knew it, honestly. So,
well, I've always thought that the nature was either civil or criminal. That was my understanding, but I might be mistaken.
Well, it is, in a sense, but because those are jurisdictions.
And they can be civil, criminal, or penal. Penal,
yeah, but
is,
you know, when,
civil with attached criminal penalties. They might even say administrative. You could say civil, criminal, administrative.
Right.
But
it's important.
The point,
so if you
in
really
all
want
of this is that you've got to ask the right questions in order to compel them to be specific, and you have to, and when I say ask the right questions, sometimes that means if the judge says, do you understand the charges, your answer may not be yes or no. Your answer may be, what do you mean, what is the definition of the word understand that you used in that sentence? What is your definition
of the rule that you used in that sentence?
And ask them, what is the specific definition? Because they ask that question meaning one thing, knowing that you will answer the question meaning something else, but their meaning will be deemed to control. If you say yes,
you'll like this,
and they mean something other than what you meant, it'll be presumed you understood and you agreed.
I think we got a little delay here, Al, so I'm sorry if I was stepping on you, but the point I wanted to bring out was that, you know, as somebody who's been involved, well, let's take it one step further. With a name like sales, what the heck else do you do for a living? You're in sales. And so that's what I did most of my life. And, you know, one of the by rules of base rules of being a good salesman is a good salesman always answers a question with a question.
Well, I haven't been in sales, so I wasn't aware of that. Tell you the truth, it doesn't surprise me, but give me an example. Give us an example if you can.
Well, you're trying to smoke out a prospect. This is a pretty important concept. Actually, I've been thinking on it a lot lately with the things we've been messing with. And what you do, if you're a good salesman and polished and you've been trained correctly and you understand the sales game, because most people perceive sales as someone coming in and trying to be so good they can force you to buy something. And that's not the kind of sales those people are real good, because that's real pretty dishonest, all right? And I never wanted to delve over on that edge of it. So the real good sales programs and the proper thing to do is, if you're a salesman, what you're really looking for is you're looking for a need and you're trying to fill it. So the self, when you're talking to a prospect, is, do they have a need for what I've got, or do I have a bunch of things here, and which one do they have a need for out of those? So what you do is try and narrow that down with questions, you know, with questions that they call open-ended questions, which I would ask you a simple, you know, what do you think about the weather, and you expand on something, and the good salesman listens to what those are and tries to pick up tips out of what the person's telling him. Then he leads them to the next question, and the idea and the concept here, without being too specific, is to bring you up a series of questions where you always answer a yes, small yes answer. You know, like, do you like the sky blue, Al? And you get somebody, in a sense, conditioned to answering little questions with a yes, and then you bring them up to the big question at the end of, do you like that? You know, and so... Or you even phrase it and turn it around. This is another salesman's trick. It's called choice closes. You never offer somebody a yes or no close. In other words, you like that car and you're interested in it, and that the last question I ask you, Al, is, would you like it in red or would you like it in blue?
I get it.
I never give you a chance to say no. You know, I lead you down the path I want to lead you down. And hopefully to that end one where you get the big yes and you close a deal and you get the car you wanted and I get a commission and I go to the next one. So that's the way it works in theory, okay? But yet, if you're going to really get out there and do things, there's other rules that apply that are very, very important. These are the things I learned many years ago, and I've carried them throughout my career. And I guess the reason I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I think it's set a pattern for my success, because I've always had an absolute staunch set of principles that I moved forward on. And that's why I moved forward. I didn't deviate to the side and get distracted. I had a goal, I had a set of principles, and I walked it, you know. And one of those principles was one that I got from a great sales trainer. Many people that are listening have heard of this guy. His name's Tom Hopkins. And this guy's about as slick as Bus Station Chili. I mean, he is real good, okay? He's one of the best I ever saw. And one of the things, I try and take something away from every book or article or video, find one thing and take it with me. So out of all that Tom Hopkins stuff, this is a byline I've got. I've lived with it all my life, and it's always proved trustworthy to me, Al. And that is this rule: the only way to get what you want is to help enough other people get what they want. And that always puts things in a win-win situation. And when there's win-win situations where everybody's got something at stake and contributes, then you have team efforts. And teams accomplish much more than individuals. So what you've done is you haven't totally knocked out your chance of failure, but you have heightened the percentage chances of success by setting it up on the right principles and moving forward before you ever even start. And those are the things I've lived my life by, these principles, and they've proven very good for me. Okay.
Well, what we're talking about in part is that the kinds of devices, strategies, and even tricks that are used in sales are also used in law. We're talking, at least in part, we are saying, listen, there is a power in language that is more profound than a lot of people suspect. And if you are adept at using the language, you can not merely inform, but sometimes compel people to do what you want them to do, even if it's not what they really want to do. Now, you're talking about how you've used principles in sales where you're trying to find out what they want and make sure they get it. But you understand as well as I do that there are also unscrupulous salesmen out there who don't care what the customer wants. The only thing they see is they want the money that the customer has, and they're going to tell them anything that the customer needs to hear in order to get him to sign on the line.
Well, now
you can use the force of language in a way that is ethical. You can use the force of language in a way that is unscrupulous. And the only way ordinary people can protect themselves against the unscrupulous use of language is they have to begin to master it themselves where they can see the tricks coming. All right?
Yep.
I mean, you talk about sales. How successful have you been selling to other salesmen?
Well, a salesman's always the easiest sale.
Well, it might be.
Actually.
Yeah, as long as you're honest with them. As long as you're honest, he'll see that you're trying to do the right thing. On the other hand, if you sell to a non-salesman who doesn't understand the tricks, they can be bamboozled.
There's another real important point that I contribute to a lot of my successes, Al. I've had some pretty high successes in my life. I'm very proud of the path I've walked, actually. And that was something that I – it was exactly what brought it to my mind was what you just mentioned about the guy that could scam somebody just for the commission. That was that I never try and do anything for money. I do everything for causes and things that drive me and resonate with me. And in that sense, you're setting a goal. And then if you're going to accomplish the goal and you're doing the things right, the money's going to be there, okay? So if you concentrate on the money only, then you don't have the goal fixed. You get distracted by all these other things that are important because you're only after the money, and it leads to more failure than it does success. So I really don't – honestly, I see money as two things in my life. I never use it for ego, okay? And in other words, I don't want to go live in the biggest house and drive the flashiest car to say, look who I am. A wise guy told me once that the people that have the most money don't show it. I think that's a pretty wise statement, all right? But it's delving into that materialism that gets you off track to the side. If you're really, like you said, ethical and moral and trying to help somebody and truly fill a need, you've got that straightness and not the deviation, see?
I knew a woman back in, 1990 thereabouts, 20-some years ago now. And we were good friends. And she was the best salesman I've ever seen. All right? And I mean, she could sell things. She sold billboards to people. And it wasn't her fundamental job. She'd get people to pay for billboards. I mean, it was just nutty. She could sell anything to anyone. And she had a.
Some of those people are like.
I couldn't explain it. I can't exactly explain it. I could go there and I could say, look, if you don't buy this billboard for $5, I'm going to go douse myself in gasoline and set myself on fire right in front of your building. What do you say? They say,
they still wouldn't.
Here's some matches. They wouldn't. I couldn't sell it. You understand? I just wanted to. But she could sell anything. And do you know why? In her particular case, because she had absolutely no grasp of the idea, the difference between truth and lies. She would tell you anything you wanted to hear if it would make the sale. Right? And she would do it in a way that was, she showed no guile. She showed, you just believed. She couldn't understand the difference between truth and lies. And when I tried to explain it to her, she looked at me. It was like talking to the RCA Victor dog around the old Victrolas. You remember that the dog sitting there with his head cocked? She said, what the hell are you talking about?
I got a better question than that. What's his name? Do you know his name?
Do I know the dog's name?
This is a good trivia question right here. The RCA logo's dog has a name. Do you know what it is?
Yeah, I'm thinking of Buster Brown. I live in a shoe.
No,
here's my dog.
No, that's not it. His name is Nipper. That's what he's called inside the company. Nipper. This situation that you're talking about right here, I've been dealing with that situation just recently myself.
I know what it makes for just ordinary ability to sell. Because if you're lying to people, they can pick up on it. And it makes them wear. But if you have no understanding of truth and lies, you can be a tremendous salesman, or at least she was. We're going to take a break We're going to take a break here, Roger. A couple of commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk with Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent, and we will be back in a moment.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today, or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger Sales on Financial. Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent from Argentina, here on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Melody should be at the office now. If you'd like to give her a call, place an order, 1-800-375-4188. What else we have, Roger?
Well,
got any news you want to talk about?
Yeah, kind of, but I wanted to continue on this because I've found a situation, and I think it applies. A lot of people in the audience will relate to this. So I got a situation down here, and I have got I've got somebody in a corner because I just want some answers, and I absolutely am astounded that people have a fundamental ability to face the truth, even to their, you know, when somebody won't tell you the truth, that's something, one thing. But when they won't tell themselves the truth, and you got all the lies right in front of them, and they still won't admit it, that's something else. And the reason that I bring that out is because I'll bet a lot of you relate to that in the fact of you trying to tell everybody about what's going on. You're awake, you're telling other people, and you get this same denial of they can't even be honest with themselves. And so,
why do you think that is?
The conditioning. I think there's probably a lot of reasons. I don't know if I know all the reasons. Those are complex situations. But I don't know that you could know all the reasons without cooperation from the inside, but I can see enough of them on the outside that has got me concerned. And it's sad. I feel sorry for people like that. But, you know, here we go back to that verse, Al, that we've used so many times. And it says, because they had not a love of the truth, I will send them strong delusion that they will believe a lie. And that's what those people are doing right there. And that's how I see it and frame it. And
you know why? I'll give you an idea of why I think, and I've seen the same situation for years, where you can try to communicate the truth to people, or at least what you believe to be the truth, and people just shut down and they won't hear it. They don't want to hear it. All right. And you can, after a period of time, if you are struggling to try to discover the truth and struggling to try to communicate the truth, you learn to recognize this problem because you encounter it on a fairly regular basis. And what I've come to believe is this. People have an intuitive understanding of the implications of a new idea. They may not understand the idea, but on some level, I think they still understand the implications of that idea. And they understand what it will mean if they adopt that idea, if they incorporate it into their system of values. And the result of some of these ideas will be that the day is going to come when you are going to be forced to take a stand. And you're either going to have to stand and fight and risk being hurt, or you're going to have to cut and run and admit to yourself that you're a coward. And I think people can understand that potential in ideas without even fully understanding the idea that, and they look at, no, it's going to make me have to admit I either have to have courage if I'm going to take this idea, or I have to admit I'm a coward. And I think that's what turns them off, and therefore they just won't touch that idea. They don't want that moment of truth where they have to admit they're cowards or stand up with the courage and take a certain amount of risk. Does that make any sense to you? Does that even seem plausible?
You know, Al, that of course, that's plausible and it's actual, and I would take it one step further because when you were talking about that, it reminded me of a great Winston Churchill quote. I'm sure some of the people in the audience are already ahead of me here, and they had those two options. You know, you may have to stand when something is not many and this, that, and the other. I don't remember the whole thing, but I remember the last, and it said, you may have to fight when you have no chance because it's better to fight and die than to live as a slave.
I agree with you, and it's better to fight and die now than wait until there is no chance. It's better to fight when things are dangerous than it is to fight when things are impossible. All right, if you understand what I'm saying, and it's a way we encourage people sometimes to stand and fight. The fight now may be risky, but it'll be even worse a year from now, 5 years from now. That's a hard concept to communicate. Everyone understands it, but
I think that a lot of their game is bluff, okay? You know, with these huge things they're buying and making headlines out of it and everything. That's the great, I am the great wizard. And there's only a few of them. And when this thing starts breaking down and it starts having hot spots all over, and those guys are out there trying to do their bidding, these mercs and stuff, and they're going to start worrying about their families and the paychecks and the money they're getting ain't buying as much. And I think these guys have really overextended themselves, okay?
Well, I think they're going for broke. They're playing for they may die if they don't win.
Sure. Well, they're going to die. You know, I mean, there's no doubt they're doing that. They're all in. We've talked about that. But the one great wild card that has really thrown a hitch in their giddy up is the internet. Because right now, the people are awake all over the world. And all you have to do is look at the gold and silver situation to see it. And they're awake at least a huge majority, a greater percentage than we've ever had before. And they know at least some part of what's going on, whether it's 9/11 or whether it's all of it, you know, or some parts in between. And that's what's got these people concerned, because they don't have the power to take out the people. The power always resides in the people, because it's the revolutionary power that resides there. And that comes right out of a 1920s book on law, okay, not from Roger. All right. Speaking of, this is what I mentioned to you earlier that I thought was very interesting. You know, for a while, I haven't been doing it lately. I've been a little distracted. But I was reading that great book that we picked up out of an article, Historical Jurisprudence, by that fellow that was written at Johns Hopkins University. And it goes all the way back and covers really in-depth the Babylonian stuff. It refers from that period back to the Sumerians. So the Babylonian stuff that we recognize as that more than likely had its roots back in Samaria even earlier than that. But in that book, it had a really important point, and I've wanted to mention it for a couple of weeks, and I never get a chance to because we get off on these Tasmanian Word Association trails, and that was this. Do you have any idea how the church got into business? This is really interesting. I think you're going to find this interesting, and I'm going to ask you that question because you like to do that to me all the time.
No, I don't have an answer for that exactly. But I'd like you to tell me, are you talking about the church generically? Are you talking about Christian church? Are you talking about any kind of religion? Are you talking about a specific religion? What do you mean
this
by the
is
church?
This is long before Christianity. This goes back to those roots there. And rather than, you know, play with you like a salesman and a prospect, I'll just say this, is that they, when you get into a business deal in Babylon and you had an oath, a jurat, you know, like you're going to sign for pledge both terms of both sides of the contract, the priest would come in and say a chant over the signatures, and that was considered the oath, and that's how the religious people got their hands in the business community. Is that interesting?
I think I understand what you're saying. First, they came in and perhaps provided that chant to give the agreement spiritual weight. Perhaps they provided it for free, but ultimately people were giving them a contribution and ultimately a payment or a fee to perform their chant. I think that's you're implying.
Yes, it is. And the interesting part, if you follow it forward a little bit, and I should have done some research on this before I brought it up, but we're already in it. I think I got a handle on it, is one of the things that Jesus railed against the Pharisees for, I believe it was called canton, C-A-N-T-O-N comes to my mind. I had never heard of it before, and I looked into it. And it's a situation where the priests of the Pharisees in Jesus' time could go around and see things they wanted and just say, oh, that's canton, which means that it goes to the temple and it's theirs. And that was one thing. There's only like one or two places in the Bible that Jesus rails about it. I read an article that went into it, and I was so taken by it because I'd never heard of it before that I went and investigated it a little bit. But you see, that is once again how the religious aspect of whatever society got into this, and now it seems to me that was carried when they came back out of captivity and incorporated into the Pharisees. So these are the things that Jesus was railing about. It wasn't just the money changers in the temple. It was the same thing that's going on right now. That was just like right now, the most visible point that was out there, and that's what I believe that he railed on. But they had all of the same stuff going on behind the scenes that led up to all of the corruption and everything that he faced in his day, and what we got right now is the same shooting match, pal. There ain't nothing new under the
sun. What's the foundation for this ability to take other people's property? It's ultimately the belief that one person is of a different class or spiritual status as compared to the other. The priest is entitled by virtue of his connection with God to take from those people who are not as closely connected. The government is entitled by virtue of its God knows what. It wouldn't argue that it's connected with God, but its exalted power to tax people. We've got the same kind of thing. We're saying that some people are more important than others. It's essentially a title of nobility. Some people are more noble than others, and therefore they get to have what other people take from other people.
Wasn't it Orwell that wrote Animal Farm?
Of course.
Pigs are more equal than others, too.
Yep. It said all animals are created equal, and then they started with, but some animals are more equal. All right, and we see evidence of that right now, for example, in things like governmental immunity, in police immunities. The very people who are supposed to enforce the law are the same ones who are given immunity from the law. That means they're above the law. They have now become the pigs that are more equal than the rest of the animals. And it's the same old crap, and it's been going on for, I don't know, thousands of years. And as I've said time or two on the program, the only thing that if we ever see something new under the sun, it will be people who actually learn from history. Huh?
Yeah,
there
right.
is something new under the sun.
That's pretty good, Al.
Well, that'll be a new one. By God, the people are learning. Who would have thought it was by? You know, it defeats. There is something about human beings where we wallow in our ignorance like pigs in a puddle of water, you know, mud.
Well, exactly what Jefferson said.
That feel cool. Get down there in that mud of ignorance, and we do it, and we do it again, and we do it again. In part, it's because it's hard to understand the principles
the evil
used against us.
The evils become unsufferable.
Yeah, but not only and when they're unsufferable, it's not just no longer sufferable as in the Declaration of Independence. People won't act until this stuff is just terrible. But the first act then begins to be educating themselves. The first act is not pick up a gun and start shooting. The first act is to educate themselves. Shooting is easy. Education is hard. And when you try, but you have to get that education in order to understand when you're being hustled. And if you don't have that, you are as just vulnerable as a child. Right?
Caveat emptor applies not only in business, but in life.
Absolutely right.
Okay? You know that phrase?
Yep. Absolutely.
Let the buyer beware for the audience that doesn't know that.
That's whether you're buying a Cadillac or a Porsche or a Volkswagen. It's whether you're buying a particular philosophy, a particular faith, a particular church, a particular system of values, a particular presentation from someone like myself or Roger or any one of a thousand other people that are on the media right now. Got to beware. You have to be wary. You got to use your own heads, folks. And you've got to, you know, you've got to make it your business to perceive what's happening. And it's challenging. It's difficult for all of us. And those who understand what's happening, though, it gives them a terrible advantage. Our ignorance gives our oppressors a terrible, terrible advantage.
It does.
And
it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
That's right.
Really.
That's right. So, I don't know. We've got, if anyone wants
to. Well, you're asking me about some news here. Let me just tell you that I know there's nothing going on in the world. And, you know, we're trying to get into World War III. It looks like the whole thing's about to collapse financially. You got lines all over the world at gold and silver stores, and there ain't none available. And the wholesalers are backed up 6 to 8 weeks on delivery. The Mint had the biggest month in his history last month in gold. You know, out besides all that, you know, we got police state closing in on people. Besides that, there ain't nothing happening, man.
Yeah, no, it's. Yeah, you know, they say no news is good news, Roger.
Right. Well, that's maybe why I've been shut off from it lately. Well, I've kind of changed direction, Al. I'm not being sucked into the battle anymore. I'm looking past the battle because I think at this point, whatever's going to come is a foregone conclusion. We ain't got no chance of saving it or changing it. And the best thing you can do is start looking up for yourself and trying to get yourself in the best position you can be in. Because when you come right down to it, you can't help anybody if you're coming from a position of weakness. You got to be strong to be able to reach strength out and touch people. Okay.
You have to be strong enough to at least provide for yourself. There's the first order of business.
As they say,
you don't want to be a casualty in whatever is coming. That means you have to have the resources where you can protect yourself. All right. First, I protect me. Then I start looking around to see if I can at least encourage other people to protect themselves. It isn't going to do anything to be prepared if everybody in my neighborhood is starving. If I've got food stored up, I guarantee they're going to come calling. They have to have food, too. For me to be safe, they have to be safe. So we have to kind of spread this around, but what we're going to spread around first, Roger, is some more commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Roger S. Sales, calling in from Argentina. And the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver needs. Give Melody Cederstrom a call, 1-800-375-4188. Call her now. She's probably in the office. You could catch her if you wanted to make an order, ask some questions, 1-800-375-4188. What else, Roger?
I think that I would like to say, Al, that in the last several weeks, I believe I've gotten a real strong confirmation about my book and its accuracy, and I wanted to tell the people that. And, you know, not only have I had the State Department agree with me three times and all the other things that lead to a positive answer, but, you know, we were doing some research and we found some other things that really strongly point in that direction. So I think that for the people out there that are trying to straighten your minds out and figure out what's happening, whether you wanted to go through that declaring your original status if you qualify or not, that's certainly a question up to you, because only you know your circumstances enough and your relationship with God and your ability to stand tall and live under His laws. You know, a lot of people just think it's a paper filing game and everything's going to go on the same, and you and I know, Al, from many years of purification, that that's not quite the case. But regardless of that, if you're a warrior type, God, I salute you, you know. They're getting enough of them up there to know that the cat's out of the bag, I promise you. But the other thing, even if you just read it for your sanity, because one of the things that you'll find is that it has an ability to bring back and this dialectic, if you will, these split different opinions and things that you might be confused on, and bring it back into a point where you can focus on a point and weave through it with understanding, so that you can clarify all of the very high level psychological techniques and tactics that have been used to muddy your mind, and that's what's going on. So the burden, I'm afraid, the listener, is up to you. As Al was saying, it all starts with education, and you can't make any decisions unless you're educated as to what your options are. And so that's kind of how I wanted to offer that in that vein, Al. And I'll just say that the website, if you wanted to go read some more about my work and what we've been able to accomplish, which I'm extremely proud of, by the way, is, I'll say it and spell it, serfs-up.com, and that's serfs-up.com. My teachers have exposed the tax system and its origins, first time in over 250 years. You can find that out about that project at no1040tax.com. And if you wanted to get specials or anything on our books, you can go to thebookshelf.us and give Jeff a call, and he'll be happy to take care of you, whatever your wants may be. So with that out of the way, Al, I just, you know, the crass self-commercialization, but I honestly have people. I had a guy write me. He said, you give your information so little when you're on the air, I had to listen to five shows before I knew how to get your website. So I'm trying to alleviate that a little bit. But the point being that, you know, we're on to something serious here, and it's real, and it's right. And I have a much better understanding of exactly what I did to get done what I got done that's evidenced in that book. And we find there's much more to learn and understand, and it's exciting because it's kind of turned my vision, Al. I've turned, instead of looking at all this stuff, it's one of the reasons I hadn't been looking at all this news and stuff. I'm looking towards the future now, okay? This thing's going to crash, and the best thing, because this is a slow-moving animal, and the way I've been able to get ahead of it all these years is to figure it out and place myself in a position in front of it. And that's where I am right now, you know. And so I just kind of do that and continue to stay ahead of them, and you can't do that without knowledge and understanding, and it's just really that simple.
What do you think is the most important element for things intellectual? Do you think it's education? Do you think it's intelligence, or do you think it's something else?
I think it's simple. I think you start with basics. And that's a theme I've hammered on these shows for the 2 years I've been doing them, wherever I am. The absolute reason for my success, of course, those other ingredients are important, okay? And that may determine how far and how fast you go, all right? But no matter what level you start at, everybody starts at the same level, and that's basics. And if you don't know basics, and if you don't know them cold, you're going to get lost in the mire, because there are many, many false trails out there. And if you don't know that stuff cold, you don't know your course, basically.
Here's my answer to the question. Is it more important to have the education, more important to have the intelligence? And I believe the thing that's most important is to have the courage. It takes real courage to deal with truth. And it's not if there are all sorts of intelligent people that don't have the guts to deal with the truth. And there are a lot of well-educated people that don't have the guts to deal with the truth.
You know,
it takes courage to stand out and see the truth. And part of the reason is because generally the truth we're talking about will be a truth that most people aren't seeing or are refusing to see. And therefore, you have to step up all
now,
by yourself in order to perceive and see that truth and embrace and say, wait, I think this is the truth over here. It takes courage to make that step. And for me, it's always been, that's the first ingredient. Intelligence is nice. Education is great. The rest of that sort of thing. But courage, first order of business. To be an intellectual, you need courage.
Let's address that point, because I think I got something real important to contribute here. The deer in the headlights look is what you're talking about. And I'm going to tell you from my experience, and I'm going to tell you how it screws with you. Fear, I had a sales trainer once, a very good one, taught me, stands for an acronym, Fantasized Experiences Appearing Real. And those are the things that you conjure up in your mind as fears or potential consequences for what you're wanting to do. And that fear of that, whatever it is your fear is, stops you in your track from going through. Now, I'm going to give you a personal, absolute personal example that will nail this right on the head. For years, I was scared to apply to the State Department for a passport. And it was only when I made the decision to move to Argentina and had to have one, I made a commitment. And boy, that's an important word in this shooting match, okay? I made a commitment, and I had to go get one. And all those years I'd been stopped by fear, and I pick it up and start reading it, and the answer to everything I've been working on for 15 years is right there in the first dadgum block, okay? The key to everything I'd been working on for 15 years was right in front of me on that application, and I'd been scared to go do it, and that stopped me from knowing this years ago.
I understand.
We affected some change. We cannot affect change now. Okay. The only thing you can do is, you know, kiss your rear end and be as strong as you can in the best position you're in.
Well, here's one of the changes. I won't say that you can't make any changes. I would say that we may not be able to stop the problem that's coming.
Well,
which,
that's what I mean.
In broad strokes, I get that, which in broad strokes is a collapse. Hmm? We may not be able to stop the collapse from coming, but we will not always be collapsed. There will be a time after that, assuming this isn't end times, but there will be a time after that, and there's going to be an opportunity to rebuild. And one of the things you can do now is you can learn the principles that you want incorporated in whatever is going to follow. All right? It may be that you can't avoid the collapse, but you can still sit back and say, all right, after the collapse, then what? What do we want then? And I'm telling people when I have the opportunity, I want the principles we find in the Declaration of Independence. I want to go back to the organic law of the United States of America. I want to get away from what government has done to pervert that, but I want to go back to the fundamentals that this country was started on rather than watch the country be seduced by some slick-talking collectivist who wants to put us into communism or some slick-talking fascist who wants to put us into fascism. You have to understand the difference between the fascists, the collectivists, and the people who are truly in favor of independence as seen in the Declaration of Independence. And for me, I want to go back to that declaration, and I know I can't get there unless other people pick up on the same thing. You're talking about fear, Roger, and there's a section of the Bible that has impressed me and been central to my understanding for probably 15 years now. Excuse me. It's Revelation 7 and 8, and it starts out, it says, he who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. That verse 8, which again, but the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, is a laundry list, essentially, of who's going to be damned. And
sounds
you can
like
look
it,
at it, yeah. And you can see what you would expect, the liars, the murderers. I don't know. You expect many of the descriptions there, but top of the list is the cowardly. On some versions of the Bible, it says the fearful. Those who are cowardly, those who are fearful, they are destined for that damnation. And the reason for that is that your fear is inversely proportional to your faith. Insofar as you have great faith, your fear is almost non-existent. I don't think any of us can be truly fearless. I'm certainly not. But they are like two ends of the teeter-totter. When your faith goes up, your fear goes down. When your fear goes up, your faith goes down. The solution to fear and cowardice is faith. And if you don't have that faith, you are prone to fear. You are prone to as many psychiatric illnesses as are associated with fear. You have anxiety. You have paranoia. You have paranoid schizophrenics. I'm going to make you bet that half or more of what passes for psychiatry today is ultimately based on some measure of fear.
You can bet
and
on
the solution,
it.
You know, if the Bible is true, the solution is get your faith together. If your faith is real and you understand there's more to come after this life, what are you worried about? Well, you know, and that's easy to say and it's hard to do for me. Not just for other people. It's hard to do for me, too. Fear, inversely proportional to faith.
I thought Pastor Peters had a wonderful way of summing up what you just went over all there in a very concise statement that's extremely profound, that's guided me for many years. He said, you serve the one you fear. That's profound right there, buddy.
Well, it talks about you fear the Lord. It's the beginning of wisdom. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. It's not necessarily the end of wisdom, but it is the beginning. You begin to
understand. The other thing that I've done over the years,
from the Lord than I do from everybody else on earth put together. Everybody else on earth. All of you sit back and say, we're going to get you, Addis. We're going to give you a beating like you never had. Well, that's a certain amount of fear. There's a certain amount of apprehension and anxiety and that kind of threat from everyone on the face of the earth. But it's nothing compared to having the good Lord make a similar statement. I'm going to finish you, fella.
Have you made that many Oregonders mad at you already? You haven't been out there very long.
No, I haven't. In fact, I had a birthday here just a couple of weeks ago. I had 17 people come to my birthday party. It was a surprise birthday party, and it was quite remarkable for me. I mean, I've only been here for 6 months or so, and it really is a remarkable country. The very decent people out here. Really, it's something surprising and enjoyable and almost hard to believe. It's like going back to 1950s America.
Oh, that's cool.
It is. Cool. It's very cool. It's very, very cool. We've got probably 2 minutes, Rod. So.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to add, I guess, because people are always asking me, what do I do? What do I do? You know, and I always tell people, make this information yours. You've got to know the basics. But I've thrown out some of my personal things today that I've used to guide my life. One of the things is I never make a reaction on something that's happened. I never, you know, react immediately. I take a situation and I have a set of principles, like a grate underneath you, and honesty, truth, doing the right thing. You know, I won't name them all, but I have something that happens to me, filter through that and figure out what I'm going to do with it before it goes down to another level and I make a decision on it. So and I never try and react, you know, to anything. I heard somebody say, it's not what happens to you, it's how you react to it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of wisdom there. And so that's a technique that I use to try and stay balanced and make sure I make the right decisions and put the right foot in front of the other one.
Well, it's important. And, you know, everybody struggles to get through this life as best we can. And one of the things about it is that the life, the world we're living in, is so much more complex than the world we are perhaps designed for. And as a result, there's a tendency to anxiety. There's a tendency to fear. We are faced with so many things we don't understand and aren't easily understood that we just tend to back off. And I'm just saying, if you grab hold of your faith, it's one mechanism of dealing with that fear, minimizing it, and moving on and perhaps accomplishing something worthwhile, maybe even great. We're out of time, Roger. I want to thank you for being on the program. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent from Argentina. I'll be back tomorrow with Melody. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Wake up.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.